Brahmana, by Lord Brahma. Chudita, being instructed. Brahman, O learned Brahmana. Sukadev Goswami. Guna Akyane, in narrating the transcendental qualities. Agunasya, of the Lord, who is without material qualities. Cha, and. Yasmai, and whom? Yata, as much as. Praha, explained. Narada, Narada Muni. Devadarshana, one whose audience is as good as that of any demigod. So I heard some wrong pronunciation. The C in Sanskrit is always pronounced like cha, like in chai, it says, or like in chair, in the word chair, it says here. So therefore also paschata, not paschiata, as some people say. Yeah, I hear it sometimes, and then kodito, no, it is chodito. So, translation. King Pariksit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, how did Narada Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? Purport. Devarishi Narada was directly instructed by Brahmaji, who was also directly instructed by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the instructions imparted by Narada to his various disciples are as good as those of the Supreme Lord. That is the way of understanding Vedic knowledge. It comes down from the Lord by disciplic succession, and this transcendental knowledge is distributed to the world by this descending process. There is no change, however, to receive, no chance. There's no chance, however, to receive the Vedic knowledge from mental speculators. Therefore, wherever Narada Muni goes, he represents himself as authorized by the Lord. And his appearance is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the disciplic succession, which strictly follows the transcendental instruction, is the bona fide chain of the disciplic succession. And the test for such bona fide spiritual masters is that there should be no difference between the instruction of the Lord originally imparted to his devotee and that which is imparted by the authority in the line of disciplic succession. How Narada Muni distributed the transcendental knowledge of the Lord will be explained in later cantos. It will appear also that the Lord existed prior to the material creation, and therefore his transcendental name, quality, etc., do not represent any material quality. Wherever, therefore, the Lord is described as aguna, or without quality, it doesn't mean that he has no quality, but that he has no material quality, such as the mode of goodness, passion or ignorance, as the conditioned souls have. He is transcendental to all material conceptions, and thus he is described as aguna. Anti sneeze. So we're discussing then the principle of disciplic succession of parampara, and interesting is that we find that the original transcendental knowledge was spoken by the Supreme Lord. Dharmam tu saksat bhagavam pranitam. So it is Lord Krishna who is, first of all, establishing religious principles. No one else can actually manufacture transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge always comes from Lord Krishna and simply is repeated by the devotees of Lord Krishna in the cyclic succession. So that is the first principle about the cyclic succession, that only Krishna is the one who is disseminating knowledge of the absolute truth. The second principle is that although the person who is repeating the knowledge that Lord Krishna spoke is obviously not as good as Lord Krishna, because nobody is as good as Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is unique, and there is no one who is equal to him. Ekala Iswara or Sababritya. There's only one Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and all others are dependent upon him. So, no one can match Krishna. But still, they can perfectly deliver the same transcendental message that Lord Krishna originally disseminated. So we understand that although the qualification of the speaker may be in one sense less than the qualification of the original speaker, the message is equally potent. It is unchanged. So this is the principle of parampara. Srila Prabhupada explains that when a child goes along with his father, and when the father tells him, "Now, see those big green things, that is coconut." Right? And the child repeats, "Coconut." And when he's asked, "What is that?" "It is coconut." Then at that point, his knowledge that he's carrying over and that he's presenting the name of that object as coconut is perfect. There's nothing wrong with it because he heard it from his father. And therefore his knowledge is perfect. So in this way, parampara is taking place. So too much emphasis is sometimes placed on the personal qualification of a spiritual master in parampara. And there are people who are feeling that unless they hear from an uttama adhikari or from a person who is in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can see him face to face, they're feeling they're going to miss out something, that they may not entirely get what is necessary to develop the topmost level of love of God. But that is not relevant. That is a misconception which is defeated in this purport. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear that the message is just carried on from one to the next. It is the purity of the message, as long as it's kept intact, that works, because they are still the words of Srila Prabhupada. Right? If today we are repeating the words of Srila Prabhupada, then we are also still presenting the words of Srila Prabhupada. Just as Prabhupada so many times pointed out Bhagavad Gita, if we simply repeat Bhagavad Gita as it is, right, then the potency of Krishna's words goes unchanged. Then it's still Krishna's words, and it works like it did before in that way. So it's not that the potency decreases because we are going further into Kali Yuga, and in Kali Yuga we are not so qualified. No, that is not the nature of parampara. So we must understand the potency of parampara. We must see that through parampara, the unchanged potency of all the achayas is present. Because not only Srila Prabhupada is present in the parampara, but also Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada is speaking the unchanged message of Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami is speaking the unchanged message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in this way, the transcendental knowledge in a disciplic succession never changes. Mm-hmm. There's a marathon today, is it? We all have to do something. This is Bhakta Frank's inspiration. Do double devotional service with your hands and with your ears at the same time. Right? Why only with your ears? All right. We are... So we take shelter of the parampara. And that is very important. So we also have a responsibility to keep the parampara intact and to very much be loyal to the parampara and to ourselves be the emblem of purity. It is not that parampara only refers to those names that you will find in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, right? That is the only parampara that exists. No, you are also coming in parampara, equally so. We could write your name also in the parampara, but you have to be worthy of that, of being in that parampara, by repeating whatever you have heard and not change it. Then you are also perfectly in parampara. No problem. The transcendental knowledge also comes through you. Although your qualification may be not so exalted, but your first qualification is that you will follow the standards of the parampara. You are within the parampara if you're following the rules and regulations of the parampara. Anybody who follows the rules and regulations of the parampara is within the parampara. Then whatever realization may come is secondary. That depends on Krishna. That we leave up to Krishna. Whether you will see Krishna directly face to face or whether you will see Krishna acting within this material world, that is all perfect. It doesn't matter. If you're walking here in this world and you're just seeing the city of Amsterdam and you see everything that's going on in there and other people right next to you also see these same things, they see trams driving, they see people roller skating in the street, they see old bicycles chained up, being discarded and stuff like this. You know, they see Amsterdam, dog stool here and there. That's Amsterdam. But the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee is that the devotee sees the connection with Krishna. Right? So that's enough. That's enough. Then you're seeing Krishna. Like Prabhupada has asked this question, are you seeing Krishna? And Prabhupada answered that everyone is seeing Krishna all the time. We're all seeing Krishna all the time. So we're seeing different aspects of Krishna, and that is enough. So the essence is that we are following within the parampara. And if we do so, then immediately we come to a platform of a madhyamadhikari. And then on the platform, the madhyamadhikari can carry forward the parampara, because he's a preacher, and as a preacher, his business is to represent the parampara. That is what makes him a preacher. He may not have the full realization of the Uttama Adhikari, but it doesn't matter, because he's loyal to the parampara and will not speak any different from the parampara. Therefore, he's capable to act as a spiritual master. So even you can immediately come to that platform. It doesn't take much knowledge, it doesn't take much experience. It can be done immediately once one has received the basic instructions. You are not this body. You must avoid sinful behavior by following four regulative principles. You must chant 16 rounds. You must rise early in the morning, and you must take only Krishna prasad. And if you know these basic principles, which everybody in this room knows, then you have the essence of transcendental knowledge. If you simply preach that message, then that's perfect. That is perfect. And everyone who receives that message from you will be tremendously benefited. That message alone is enough to change the world. It doesn't take anything so dramatic and so profound, because that in itself is completely profound. Because we are shallow, we are looking for something more profound than that which is most profound. But the most profound instruction is simply chant Hare Krishna. That is the most profound. That is the most internal, the most deep instruction. But we're thinking that there must be something else, and therefore we're looking for something more profound, something more intimate, some secret instruction. But the most secret instruction is chant Hare Krishna. There is no greater secret. That is the secret. And the amazing thing is that remains a secret to the conditioned souls. Because no matter how many times we tell them, they can't believe it. They just can't believe it. Like one brahmana pointed out to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he thought that the chanting of the holy name was being overemphasized in the scriptures. That the scriptures were actually giving more importance to the holy name and the benefits of the holy name to just induce the people to chant it than the benefits it really had. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him immediately, right there on the spot. It's just speculation. This is nonsense. So the holy name is none different from Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Suda Nityamukto Abhinatva Navanamina. It is the same as Krishna. It is fully perfect, and in it is all the transcendental mellow can be experienced of the spiritual sky. So Narada was actually delivering that. And Narada, of course, is specially empowered. Narada is not an ordinary living entity, because Narada Muni's devotion is so exceptional that the Supreme Lord gave him special, special power. Of course, even the appearance of Narada Muni is of a very exalted nature, because he appears from the mind of Lord Brahma, and he appears from the mode of pure goodness. So Narada is completely situated in goodness, and Narada then comes to completely to the transcendental platform by the mercy of the Bhakti Vedantas, and then performed so many austerities in the service of the Lord, and was ultimately awarded a spiritual body by which he is residing both in the material and spiritual worlds, seeing that there is no difference, and by which he is constantly distributing bhakti. Therefore, he is the empowered incarnation of bhakti shakti. He's got the bhakti shakti. So to have bhakti shakti is a wonderful thing, because we saw that Narada was able to transform all kinds of personalities, including Magrari the hunter, who was an impossible person to preach to. So this is the example of Narada, that a devotee can transform people. By his devotion, he can transform those who are overcovered by the modes of material nature. Because those who are overcovered by the modes of material nature are not permanently situated anywhere. They are always changing. They are chanchalam. Their minds are not fixed. Therefore, they are open to change. They can change. It is possible. Mm-hmm. This is always possible. And in that way, Narada Muni was able to deliver the transcendental knowledge and uplift his disciples and instill within these disciples also transcendental knowledge. Now, Magrari the hunter may not be the same as Narada Muni. Magrari the hunter may not be able, even after he had been reformed, he was not able to travel through outer space. But that didn't matter. Whatever he had heard from his spiritual master and whatever he repeated, that was very, very perfect. And with that, he was perfectly situated within the parampara. Mm. I was reading yesterday in the conversations, and one thing I was reading was about the relationship with the spiritual master. And how the discussion came up, well, Srila Prabhupada, you have so many disciples, and how can you have a personal relationship with everyone? Prabhupada said, well, I have a personal relationship with all my disciples. He said, yeah, but sometimes, you know, we feel so far away, right? When you're not there, you know, and then we don't feel that, like, it's possible to have that relationship. And Prabhupada said, well, I have my representatives, and like in temple presidents and all this, I have my representatives. And said, yeah, but, like, you know, that's, like, not exactly the same, Srila Prabhupada. It means, like, what about our personal relationship with you? Prabhupada said, just follow four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds. That's enough. That's enough. Mm-hmm. That is very personal. Because if you do so, then Prabhupada becomes alive for you. Then if you do so, your spiritual master becomes very, very much valuable to you. If you're really following the order of the spiritual master. Of course, that may go beyond 16 rounds and four regulative principles. It may go with another instruction. But if you are receiving the instruction of your spiritual master and take it upon your head, it becomes very nice. Because then you are immediately getting feel the blessings and you become enlivened. And by being enlivened, you will feel that the connection is very strong and very personal, even if you are at a great distance. Then you feel the intimacy. So this is the nature of the relationship with the spiritual master. And if you're not having this intimacy of somehow or other always meditating upon the order of the spiritual master and always working to fulfill the order of the spiritual master, then you will become miserable. And this is the big problem of how you become disconnected. Yeah. You may still to some extent be connected, but not fully connected. Just like when an electric wire is somewhat broken. Right? The current is still coming through, but a portion of it is already broken. So now it is there's leakage. It's not fully happening anymore. In India, there are many cases of leakage of electricity. We may not know about that in Holland so much. We know about leakage of water, but leakage of electricity can also leak, right? It can leak right into the walls, and it can, if it's not properly insulated. In Holland, that never happens, but in India, that happens all the time. And therefore, you have electric walls, and, it oftentimes happens in the bathrooms because there's humidity in the walls, so then that is like a good conductor, so then the walls are all electric. So in many cases, in the showers, right, you can never, you can't touch the walls, plus, and you definitely cannot touch the taps, right? It's very important. And if you touch the taps, you get a shock, right? So you must always open and close the taps with your gamsha. I mean, experienced bathers, they know this, you know. And before taking a shower with a finger, they quickly just touch the tap. Oh, this one's all right, okay. Or, oops, this one's got it, okay. Take the gamsha and open and close with the gamsha. In some showers, even it is so bad that the water is electrified. Well, not so much. It doesn't hurt too much, only in the cracks through your feet. So in that case, it is recommended to wear your plastic shoes, right, under the shower. These are just little handy tips. So I'm using this as an example of how the knowledge of the parampara may not completely come through the wire, but may get spilled. It may be spilled if we are not carrying the order of guru on the head. Our movement is spiritual, and spiritual life is never cheap. It is never cheap. Spiritual life is always based on the principle of surrender. Surrender is the only shackle. It is that what connects us with the Sampradaya. Surrender is the moment where you are putting the plug, right, in the wall, and you're connecting it, and where you are getting the electric current. That is this principle of surrender. And if there's partial surrender, there's only partial current. So this is the problem. And this is where parampara becomes broken, by lack of surrender. This is where it becomes broken. So if parampara is broken at you, right, then you have to repair your connection. Yes. So once a year, we are celebrating the occasion of Vyasa Puja. Yes. So this Vyasa Puja celebration is not to have a big birthday party with Guru Maharaj and all the cake is out there and the big feast and the cheese and the big kirtans and bliss and to... It's not meant that everyone can have a party once a year and feel blissful again, right? It's not for that. And then for one whole year, you've got to sort of last on the Vyasa Puja party, you know? It was good, you know? It was really good Vyasa Puja. I mean, I can't wait till next year, type of thing. No, that's maybe one function of Vyasa Puja, but the real purpose of Vyasa Puja is to actually establish the relationship with the spiritual master and to review it, to review how much you've been in connection. And if you have somehow or other, throughout the year, become a little bit disconnected, a little, then you're making up for it at Vyasa Puja. and you make a renewed commitment, you're again making sure that the connection is 100% clear. That's the purpose of Vyasa Puja. And you prostrate yourself before your spiritual master in that spirit to make that connection. On that day, you're taking an inventory and you're checking out, is the current actually coming through completely? Am I completely blissful to execute the orders of my spiritual master? Am I? If not so, I'd better do something about it. I'd better do something about it. So that is very important. So that we are trying to remain fresh in the parampara, not just take initiation and this is a milestone and now we have come to this point where it's done, you know, the job's done. No, that's where it begins. That's where it begins. Now you have to really work. When you were a bhakta, right, some days you felt like, phew, you know, it's heavy, right? But like when you are finally taking initiation, from that day on you are a different person. You are a changed person. Never again you will be the same. From that day on you have actually made a transcendental vow and you are bound. You have to live up to it. From that day on you can play as if you are an ordinary man, but you'll never be. You'll never be again. You have a duty, and that duty you have to fulfill it. You have to fulfill it. You're duty bound. Yes. So this is very important that we, when we deal with the topic of the parampara, it's a very serious topic. That is why my talk today is also of a serious nature. I don't make so many jokes like I sometimes do, because actually gravity is a quality of the Vaishnavas, and we must take this very grave, very serious. We cannot be frivolous about the relationship with the spiritual master. We cannot take it lightly. We must take it with life and soul. We must take it with all our energy, that is. We must not hold back. And with all our energy, we must try to fulfill this order. Yeah. Irregardless of what other people do, we cannot conform to the common standard. The relationships, spiritual relationships, are always unique, are always special. You always have the duty to 100% give everything. Even if you see that everybody else is giving 40%, 20%, 30%, 70%, think like, so if I do 50, I'm pretty much up there, right? Yeah. No, you cannot judge like that. But that is true. That is how we are approaching the scriptures. We say, well, you know, I'm not so advanced yet. I can't follow everything, but I'll follow as much as possible. But no, you must follow everything. You are faulty. You are faulty. You're actually not keeping your vows if you are not following, if you're not surrendering. So we have to be much more serious about our vows and somehow or other understand that we have to give up our independence and that we belong to our spiritual master completely with everything we have. And that is the purpose. Then you will feel very much connected to the parampara, and then you will never question the qualification of your guru. Because when you start questioning the qualification of your guru, 99.999% the problem is lack of qualification of the disciple. Right? So many times the question is people are doubting and doubting, is the guru qualified? Is he qualified? But there is much more chance that the guru is qualified than that the disciple is qualified. Yeah? Better look at your own lack of qualification and rectify it immediately, without delay. It is a very serious thing. Yeah? It is as serious as a fire. It can destroy everything. Your lack of surrender, your lack of strictness, your lack of seriousness in spiritual life. It can again bring you away from the shelter of the parampara and can temporarily cover you over and throw you back into the material ocean. Therefore, to be so careful. This is a very serious business. So we must always make sure that we are bathing in transcendental subject matter. Brahmani upasamasriyan. We must, then we will be on that transcendental platform. Yeah. Then we'll have shelter. Mm. It's not artificial that you can just walk around in this movement, in the dress of a devotee, and think that everything is all right. You have to make a special endeavor. You have to use your intelligence. This is not a movement for less intelligent people. You have to protect your spiritual life. You have to protect your sadhana bhakti, which is the very beginning of all your strengths. So you have to protect your going to your early rising and being fit and your chanting energetically. You have to protect. Therefore, you have to sleep in the service of Krishna. You have to make sure that you sleep enough. If you don't sleep enough, your spiritual strength will become affected. If you sleep too much also. But if you don't sleep enough, then day after day, you will not apply yourself in your sadhana. So this is very important that we make that adjustment so we have to become organized. We have to manage our life. Spiritual life means organized life, because we have to organize it according to the scriptures and to the life of Krishna. The animal life means unorganized life and means to just act according to your mind and your impulses. Animal smells something, he runs after it. Animal thinks something, boom, there he goes, right? But human being means thoughtful. Right? Mode of goodness means thoughtful. So being thoughtful means that we act upon the Shastra and therefore become organized and regulated in our life. And in this way, stop being spaced out. We have to become together. Right? Together in the sense that we do not just control the senses, but prakriti sthana karsati manasastra nindriyani. It says this manasastra nindriyani includes the mind included within the senses. So the mind should also be controlled. It's very important. So we do this by being regulated on the basis of scripture. And one of the basic principles of regulation is to protect our sadhana. That is very important. And if you don't make arrangements for that, to protect that, then you will get into difficulty. You may even have to protect your sadhana to your temple authorities, who will, because you're a Mr. Surrendered Soul, give you unlimited service. That is all right. But you have to present to them that my sadhana is suffering. Not that you just surrender at the expense of your sadhana, because this will hollow you out. And after some time, you will feel empty and you will feel no more enthusiasm about spiritual life. And although you are attracted to Krishna, and in this way, even one who likes Krishna consciousness can fall prey to material desires if he's hollowed out. So one must understand that even from the day when you come, you're a new bhakta, you are also responsible to look after yourself. You cannot just expect that you will be taken care of completely. You also have the duty to take care of yourself. That's very important. Otherwise, how can you expect to advance? So following the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti is very important for spiritual advancement. Another important principle to remain safe within the parampara is to avoid Vaishnavaparat. We should be very fearful of committing Vaishnavaparat. That is, the aparad is to make an offense to the devotees. So offenses to devotees can be made in so many ways. And But in general, it means that we deride that devotee, that we criticize the devotee. Even there, where criticism may look justified, even when we see faults, still we must be careful to advertise faults when we even think that these faults are there. Because even there, Krishna may take it as an offense, and one may fall down, okay? Or one may lose taste in his spiritual life. So we stay away from that. We just glorify devotees. We stay away from this. And even if some unavoidable misbehavior of a devotee is coming to our attention, we present it to those who are authorities, and for the rest, we stay aloof from it. Aloof. We don't dwell on it, because it will just create doubt in the and disconnect us from the parampara. We will gradually everything that happens in this world has an effect on our consciousness from moment to moment. Everything. It's not like just that major things, you know, like have effect and other things don't affect. Everything affects you from moment to moment. Okay? Therefore, we have to make sure that everything is taken in a spirit of devotion. Okay? Everything. So when something negative happens, then we have to respond to it with tolerance. Okay? And by us taking this attitude of tolerance, we're developing our tolerance, which is a Vaishnav quality. When we see that faults occur in a Vaishnava, then we should be also very conscious that we deal with it properly. Like Chanakya Pandit is saying, that if there's something that is good, if there's something good you have to say, but at the same time it is not palatable, and if the person is capable of accepting it, then you may say that, but in private. Or if some misbehavior is there in a Vaishnava, if you cannot personally speak to the Vaishnava, then you may speak to another Vaishnava senior to you who can take up the matter. And in this way, you will avoid the risk of committing Vaishnavaparad. This Vaishnavaparad can spoil everything, can spoil your whole spiritual life completely. It can, and it is being committed again and again. And therefore, so many Vaishnavas are not succeeding. They're not going back to Godhead. They fail. They come to this movement, but they break the connection with the parampara, either by being inattentive to the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti, or either by committing Vaishnavaparad. These are the two things that cut the connection with the sampradaya. So we have somehow or other come in contact with this sampradaya, and actually every step that we make should be one where we increase our connection with the sampradaya. Right? We should go deeper and deeper into the sampradaya, sometimes externally, sometimes internally, but everything we do should be a step to bring us closer to the sampradaya, a step where we adjust our own life to go enter deeper into the sampradaya, or we should delve deeper into the knowledge that comes through the sampradaya by Srimad Bhagavatam. Deeper means by being absorbed. Fully absorbed means ahaitaki apatiyata, means without motivation, uninterrupted. That is full absorption. So therefore, being absorbed means we must somehow or other, the moments that we are not reading the Srimad Bhagavatam or the other transcendental scriptures, we must be thinking about them. They must be thinking about them. So we must make sure that there is so much hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam that the gaps can be filled by remembrance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we are always absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? That is ahaitakiya pratiyata. That is the goal. It has to come to that. No less. So we have to make a plan to do it. We have to use our brains to do it. We should not just be dull and just be pushed around by the modes of material nature. Now I'm going through this form of suffering, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika klesh. Now I'm experiencing trouble and strife in my life. That is there. But that is just another opportunity to take it spiritually. Everything is there for us to develop different qualities, perfectly arranged by Krishna. Krishna is sending us all these things, good things, bad things, to perfectly purify us. Because it is Krishna who is the head of the parampara. It is Krishna who is present within the parampara. It is Krishna's teachings that are preserved within the parampara, and Krishna is none different from his teachings. He's exactly the same as his teachings. So in this way, we can connect with Krishna. And that is what is being addressed in this verse. Okay, I'll stop for questions. In order to do so, one must take a very humble position and be very, very respectful. So if you want to be very safe and you are not so pure, then you have to very much take shelter of Vaishnav etiquette, because Vaishnav etiquette is the prescribed path of behavior which protects you from Vaishnav aparat automatically. And from if you follow Vaishnav etiquette perfectly, then you will not commit any offense. You will just rather be in perfect behavior and glorify the Vaishnavas if you do so. So Vaishnav etiquette is the way to avoid Vaishnav aparat for one who is not pure in his heart. For one who in the heart is still inclined to offensive behavior. But by taking shelter of Vaishnav etiquette, is saved from that tendency. But that takes a lot of humility, because we want to be something else. We don't want to be what Vaishnav etiquette prescribes to us. We want to be a little more than that. We want some more room for recognition. We want some more independence for our own desires, etc. And because we are not conforming to Vaishnav etiquette, and at the same time are not pure in heart, we may risk that we are committing offense anyway, even unwillingly. But if we are taking shelter of Vaishnav etiquette, then we are safe, even if the heart is impure. So that is the system offered for protecting yourself. Yes, Madhav. Then you don't. If you're a pure devotee, then you don't have to take shelter of Vaishnav etiquette. You are allowed to break that. And if you're completely on the transcendental platform, you're allowed to act beyond rules and regulations. And if a great transcendental devotee may sometimes act strange, some devotees did, okay? And that is not to Bamsi Das Babaji, you know, was like such a personality. Gaura Kishore Das Babaji was also sometimes not acting so pleasing to everyone. You know, sometimes he was quite harsh. Yeah? So that's okay if it's spiritually pure. So such a person is saved from the impure effect. Still, we see some references that if a person takes offense, that there can also be a reaction. There are two references I can think of in this regards. One is is when Chitraketu, King Chitraketu, he was benedicted by Narada. He became a great devotee. He had an aeroplane by which he could travel to the heavenly planets. He went to the abode of Lord Shiva and he saw that Parvati was sitting there on the lap of Lord Shiva, embracing Lord Shiva in public in the assembly of many sages. And Chitraketu had to say something, and he had to say, like, how amazing is it that Lord Shiva is sitting here in an assembly of sages with his wife on his lap embracing him like that, right? So Parvati, she was not very pleased with this, and she cursed him, and he got a reaction. So he took the curse upon his head, and my devotee, this devotee has outdone you. He has outdone your power. Although you are so powerful that you can control all the material energy, etc., this devotee is more powerful than you. Because he has taken this curse and he was completely unaffected by it. He took it upon his head in good consciousness. So externally there was some reaction to his abrasive behavior, although he didn't mean to be offensive. He just meant to say, how amazing is this? Look at Lord Shiva, it's amazing. But it was taken as an offense. So there may be some reaction sometimes still, although he was not disturbed by the reaction. Another story, of course, Rupa Goswami sitting there and at Radha Kund and seeing the pastime of Radha and Krishna, you know, playing with the tree and picking fruits from the tree. And then Radharani was saying to Krishna, you know, I want the nice juicy fruits. And Krishna was in the tree just throwing down these dry and sour ones. And that she was saying, look, you know, like, you're picking the wrong fruits. He said, look, I'm a cowherd boy. I know about cows. I'm not a fruit vendor, you know. If you want good fruits, then pick them yourself. And Krishna pushed the branch down with his foot. And Srimati Radharani grabbed the branch with one hand and was trying to take the fruit. And then Krishna suddenly lifted his foot. And then, boom, she flew in the sky. She just flew right up in the sky and fell over. So Rupa Goswami saw this and was laughing. Now, just at that very moment, he was also at Radha Kund. And at Radha Kund, something else was taking place. At Radha Kund, there was a devotee who was deformed and had no arms and legs and was therefore moving around on his hands, and that looked quite odd. So when he came just in front of Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami laughed very loud. So the person thought that Rupa Goswami had laughed because of his funny walking, where it was because of the pastime I just described. And because of it, Rupa Goswami, his vision of the pastime broke. So we see that even when there is no intention of offense, that there can still be some reaction. Yeah? Although Rupa Goswami himself remained Krishna conscious, yeah? He remained fully Krishna conscious. Mm. But a pure devotee on the topmost platform, who's on a spontaneous level of devotional service, is beyond rules and regulations, and he can do all kinds of things that ordinary devotees can't do. Bamsidas Babaji was smoking a hookah. A hookah is a big water pipe, you know? Big one. Like that. He was smoking like that, right? So we can... So that cannot be imitated. So such a devotee is beyond the rules and regulations. Anything else? If someone is neophyte and he's criticizing a spiritual master... Yes, if you hear someone who's senior to you criticize a spiritual master, go away. Go away. Yeah, so go away. Go away. Well, if the criticism was of a very serious nature, then you go to another senior devotee. And no, if it was not so serious, then maybe you should think, maybe I am not qualified to understand this statement of the person. Right? If it sounded to me like criticism, but maybe I didn't understand it. Maybe it wasn't criticism. Anyway, I can't understand these things. So because it sounds to me like criticism, I better walk away from this. Right? But if it clearly seems to be criticism and it is taxing your mind, if it stays within your heart and leaves you in anxiety, then to relieve your anxiety, you must go to
to another senior devotee and take shelter. Yes. We are not sufficiently taking shelter when anxieties are burdening our hearts. Actually, we should be open-hearted, and if such a thing causes anxiety, we should take shelter of the other senior devotee. Then that senior devotee may decide how to take it up. That senior devotee will maybe say, anyway, don't take it so serious. Senior devotee may, whatever. The senior devotee may then take up the matter. Basic principle of Vaishnava behavior is that one should understand that amongst Vaishnavas, we are not all equal, and that one should always be respectful to anyone who is senior. Seniority is known in two ways. Seniority is known by one's by the point in time that one has surrendered, by the date that one has dedicated his life to the spiritual master and all the service that one has done. And it may also be by service. If someone takes a lot of responsibility in devotional service, he's also given to respect, even if in time he may be less senior. So therefore, this principle of seniority then must be always, at all times, maintained. And one must always give preference to a senior person, always respect to a senior person, never consider himself equal in the situation, in dealings with a senior. And always, one may present arguments, one may present questions, one may present points of disagreements, but one is always kind of posing himself on the receiving end, that the answer of the senior person is the final answer. And if you have that spirit, then you will get a lot of mercy. Krishna will be pleased. She was quick on the draw. I saw he had a gun ready. Yeah, age is also, yes. Age should also be respected. Definitely, experience in life is also an important thing. Krishna is also acting as our spiritual master, personally. And life is, Krishna is teaching us a few little lessons there. Right? So if somebody has learned some good lessons from life, then that's very valuable. And we should not just neglect. So elders should also be respected, but at the same time, they must be Krishna conscious. So if they're not Krishna conscious, then we must filter. But even from your, even from my meat-eating, karmic demon father, I could, I got some good instructions. Yes, God bless him. What can I do? He is of good intention. But this Vaishnava, so there's fine lines in Vaishnava etiquette, but still we are not accustomed to this Vaishnava etiquette in our Western society, and therefore we are kind of resisting it, you know, we are not fully accepting it in our movement. And you see, for example, if you go to like a temple in our movement where this Vaishnava etiquette is really being followed very nicely is Chaupati in Bombay, which is like a very nice temple. The mood is very, very nice because everyone is coming from high-class Indian backgrounds. So they are surrendering to Vaishnava etiquette, you know, whereas we, you know, well, you know, can't be fanatic, you know, can't overdo it, you know, still. But actually, if you see how they do it, then you see that they are very respectful all the time. And to us it may seem a little too formal sometimes, but actually if you surrender to it, then you'll see that it will actually be very safe, and relationships amongst the devotees improve tremendously if we accept this Vaishnava etiquette. I can also give examples.
For example, you go to sleep at
I know. Okay, you can't sleep, it's stinking hot. Yeah. Yes. I think so. I mean, in general, Srila Prabhupada on his travels was oftentimes going through irregular programs. And he was in New York, he made this statement about how some devotees were traveling with him, late program, and nobody got up, but Prabhupada got up, and Prabhupada made a statement that he was always getting up. Right? And in other words, he wanted everyone to get up. Yes. So, generally speaking, you always should get up. You may, for practical reasons, make some exceptions. One is your health. If your health is completely like seriously affected, not just a little sneeze or a little cut in your finger or even, you know, an infection, but if your general condition is down, then it may be actually seriously detrimental if you give up resting. So in such cases, some people may rest, right? Even senior devotees in our movement may rest. Right? So you have to be careful in judging others in this regard, but on yourself you must be quite strict, you know. And, well, if it gets very, very late, and if that next day you have to do, again, a whole lot of service, right, then you may just for the sake of Mangal Arati, go to Mangal Arati, and then after, be completely zonked for the rest of the day, and not able to do any service, then it's also not so useful. So in such case, you may sometimes consider, now I'm on a marathon, and in a marathon I may, for the main thing is my service now, and therefore temporarily I may adjust my sadhana and streamline it for the sake of marathon, which is there in marathon, right? But that should not become a common thing and is to be avoided as much as possible. But like Bhakta Chris, you know, like for 3 days he was getting overwhelmed by his service, and I saw him chanting his round up to midnight. So I told him yesterday, don't come to the Mangal Arati, go and sleep right through it. Get up after 6 hours sleep, don't come to the temple program, chant all your rounds, right? And then come to prasadam. So he did, he chanted 13 rounds, and then last night he was able to go back to bed at a normal time, and now today he was able to chant his rounds, you know, normal again. So sometimes you have to make some practical adjustments like that. But as a rule, why would you not, yeah, gotta come. Yeah. Right. So anyway, it's the material world, and it's never going to be perfect, and it's always going to be something like that. So we also have to be tolerant. But Prabhupada is very strict. And even when he didn't come to Mangal Arati, he was up doing service. Right? Prabhupada many times was on a marathon. Yeah? But Prabhupada was up, irregardless. The only times Prabhupada slept in was after heart attacks and you know, things like that. So if you have a heart attack, you can miss Mangal Arati, no problem. Okay. Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.